down. The man goes down, you look, she downs the block.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian, William, and Nisha coming to you live every day talking about human resources, HR, and the people who get it done. And very excited about today, our guest, and more excited because we just got to spend some a little bit of time, as much as you can grab at a large conference just a few days ago. So let's get right to it so we can chit-chat. Charlene Lobby, welcome to Drive Through HR.
Thank you for having me. I really I'm excited to be here.
Well, we'll kick it off, and if you would, introduce yourself, and then we'll kind of roll into what's top of mind today.
Okay. Well, I think a lot of people know me because I'm the author of the blog, HR Bartender, and when I'm not writing the blog, I'm a training consultant, so I focus primarily in the training and development space, both from the instructional design perspective as well as delivering management development content. So that's what I do.
Well, and do very well, I might add. You put out some of the best content and stylistically pleasing to the eye content. You're actually one of the first blogs that really caught my eye on, like, wow, there was a lot of work and thought put into the theme of HR Bartender. I mean, this has been a few years ago now that I thought, God, I would love to do that. And obviously never did it because you got to write if you have a blog is what I've heard. And so we didn't
I have
write.
To ask
Come
you,
to
have I ever told you how I came up with the name HR Bartender? I mean, I get asked it a lot, and I don't remember who you know has heard the story or who hasn't heard the story.
Have not. Tell.
Okay, so I've been a consultant now for, gosh, over 10 years, and my partner is also my husband, and he has a marketing background. So for years, Mr. Bartender would sit down and tell me how I needed to write an electronic newsletter as a way to market and reach out to people and talk about, you know, what I do. And every time he would say it, I would kind of wrinkle up my nose at the whole idea of writing the electronic newsletter because I know what happens to busy professionals and electronic newsletters. This whole, you know, we have a heart full of good intentions and we get the electronic newsletter and then it sits in our inbox for maybe a day or two and we stare at it and make a promise to ourselves that we're going to read the next one and then we hit the delete button. So he would bring it up and I would wrinkle up my nose at the idea. And one night we're out at dinner and we're sitting there talking and he's like, you know, you need to start writing that electronic newsletter. And I finally just got up the nerve to say, I don't want to do it. And he's like, well, you got to do something. So, you know, dinner goes on. And I said, you know, I really want to write a blog. And I had, read a little bit about blogs. And he's like, well, what are you going to know about blogging? How are you going to do this? And I said, I know absolutely nothing, but I'll figure it out. And, you know, dinner goes on a little bit more, and then he finally looks at me. He goes, well, what are you going to call this blog? And I said, you're not going to like it. And he goes, try me. And I said, I want to call it HR Bartender because I always thought as an HR pro, people wanted me to act like a bartender. You know, just that friendly face that's there to listen, you know, laugh with you, cry with you, and sort of give you the nudge, if you will, to go out there and do things that often you already knew you needed to go out there and do. And it played out really well because as a HR pro, my background is in the hospitality type industries, theme parks, airlines, hotels, so it just seemed to all fit together.
Yeah, I've actually never heard that. So that is so cool because, you know, again, you have been putting out really good content and consistently for a long time. And so it's good to kind of hear the genesis of, Especially that process where you had somebody that wasn't going to let you off the hook, right? And kept coming back around, kept coming back around. Because that's what it takes sometimes. We're busy people. Is you just got to have somebody that helps get you to the intersection where you can make up your own mind and go, okay, what is it? Okay, what does it look like? What you're saying is not what I actually want, but it's close, and I get with you why you're doing it, and then you end up making that move like you did and get something that you want. So that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that, by the way.
Well, I have to say, from a blogging perspective, well, first of all, I'm, like, ridiculously organized, but I schedule time to blog, you know, just like I schedule time to be here today and, you know, come up with ideas and put them out there so that I can keep track of everything. But, yeah, I try to keep it as organized as possible.
Well, and you know what? I'm figuring out the common trend with the most, I would say the most super successful. We have a lot of successful people in kind of our little ecosystem, but the most, the folks that I get to know the best and have really been successful long term are ridiculously organized. You know, whether they admit it in person or not, or it comes through, if you get behind, you know, under the covers or behind the door, you're going to find meticulously and ridiculously organized information. So I am definitely seeing some correlations, no doubt about that. So training. I mean, you consult on training. You've been doing it a long time. What are some of the? I mean, are you seeing any new trends? Is there anything that people can get excited about, or maybe start looking and researching about in the training space?
I think it's a real exciting time for training. I don't know how much you're following ASTD, but ASTD's annual conference was, I guess, maybe a month, 6 weeks ago, something like that. And Tony Bingham, who's the CEO of ASTD, is really a big advocate of social and mobile and informal training. And I think that he's really exposing the learning profession to some new tools in the toolbox, if you will, when it comes to bringing training to, you know, employees, management level, whatever level that you're conducting training on. But the whole idea now that we can have training on an iPhone or an iPad or Android device, you know, whatever smart device it is that you're using, and we don't have to be sitting in a classroom anymore. And I'm a, you know, I do stand-up classroom training, but I think it's really interesting how we can bring these tools into training and learning opportunities. So I think it's very neat, some of the stuff that's going on in training right now.
Yeah, and actually, that was the first ASTD conference I went to in Dallas, and I heard the same thing, is that the new, you know, this year, one of the initiatives or one of the goals is to innovate. It's kind of just status quo, you know, put the status quo aside. That's all just a given that you're going to have all the different mediums. So let's figure out how to actually, like, get the profession as a whole starting to embrace all the new opportunities to train and break content apart to deliver the content within those, literally within the mediums that they're so, you know, are being pretty resistant to at the moment. That was a big conversation with a few of the different presidents of the chapters, that they were really excited that was, you know, that was kind of like the number one thing that that Tony talked about.
I think that social recruiting has really paved the way for a social and training conversation, regardless of the medium. You know, I think when you're hire an employee and you hire them using social tools, then you create this situation where they sort of walk in thinking, okay, social's okay. I'm allowed to, you know, tweet and I'm allowed to be on Facebook because that's how you found me. And I think it's putting some pressure on the training profession to come back and say, we're going to incorporate these pieces into onboarding and orientation and your career, because that's what we use to find you and bring this talent into the organization. So it only just makes sense. But I think the recruiter, recruiting side of it, business has really made that happen for training.
Do you think if there's a big social, like a social recruiting presence in a company, do you think it's easier to marry or reconcile the different HR functions together because of the fact that they are using the social tools and social conversation to actually do kind of the recruiting action, so that maybe pulls through the rest of kind of the life cycle of the organization?
I totally agree with that. I think if organizations are getting involved in social recruiting and they're seeing results with social recruiting, then I can't imagine that they would turn the faucet off once a person gets hired. But I think that there are also some ways, interestingly, you saw a lot of companies when they decided to use social tools for recruiting purposes, they kind of did it in little steps. Okay, well, we'll do this and we'll see if it works, and then we'll do a little bit more. And I think that people are doing the exact same thing where training is concerned. You know, it's interesting. I had an opportunity to talk with some learning professionals about ways that you could incorporate social into the actual training experience. And, one of the things that we were talking about, which I think is really neat, is instead of banning devices coming into, a live classroom-type environment, creating activities where people can use their devices as part of an activity. You know, for example, I like Instagram and camera programs. I'm really just becoming very fascinated with using visuals and learning, and what kinds of visuals appeal to people in the learning environment. And I think it would be neat to create an activity where, everybody has a camera on their phone, walk outside and take pictures of things that align with your corporate culture, and then, post them all via a hashtag and facilitate a debrief talking about how these things align with company culture. I think could be a very fascinating activity, but it embraces the tech tools versus trying to push them away and say, no, they can't be a part of the classroom experience.
And actually, just to continue down that path, at what point do you think that mobile actually becomes the number one conversation out of, like, for example, training, where everything starts? I mean, how many years before everything starts with mobile? If we can't engage everybody with a mobile learning experience, then we're out of touch.
I think in the design process, mobile is going to be part of the conversation. Just, when you're designing training and you say, okay, this is the kind of training that we want, here's the skills gap, this is what we need to train to, this is the kind of content we need to have, what's the best way to deliver that content? I think mobile is going to be a part of that conversation. But mobile will not be the answer for everything. Because what I'm finding is when I go in and talk with companies about training, there are times that they're like, we want to deliver this training in a mobile fashion, so that people can have it with them all the time. We want that just-in-time resource available to people. But then people are looking at classroom a little bit differently. So let's say, for example, the company – I've seen companies do this where they're putting together classroom training, but classroom training has a objective beyond the transfer of information. It has an objective of recognizing people. Maybe the company has put together a group of individuals that they believe as part of their succession plan will ultimately maybe relocate, you know, be very mobile with the organization, the next group of managers and supervisors. And they use these as opportunities not only to train and convey information, but they're using them as recognition. You know, CEOs fly in so that they can spend time with this class of individuals. Or the C-suite is coming so that they can have dinner with them and talk with them about their careers. So it's becoming a bigger picture. And when learning professionals are going out there and designing training, then they'll have to think about what's the best medium in order to put all of that together. But I think mobile is a very exciting part of what's coming down the pike for training.
Well, that's an interesting intake, and especially you shared some of the best practices that companies are using on a mobile platform as well. I'm going to do a quick quiz at everybody. You're listening to Drive Through HR with our wonderful guest, Sherling Lobby, our lovely HR bartender. So, Sherling, I wanted to switch the gear a little bit, if you will. Well, as you said, you know, mobile may not be a great solution for some of them, but at the same time, classroom training also may be a great solution for some of them. So, leading to that, I'm a total follower of your blog. I love every blog that you write, and I follow that. So one of the blogs that I liked recently is like, you can't fix every problem with training. So I wanted to switch the gear and would like you to talk a little bit about the Gallup surveys that we talked in the pre-show. And why do you feel that, you know, we can't fix every problem using the training?
It's a great question. And, you know, as somebody who does training for a living, you know, you might often be very, very tempted to go out there, and if somebody says this is the problem, to go, oh, training can fix that. But I think when you're most effective is when you put the right solution on the table, even if it's not a training solution. But there are times that training is not the answer based upon what the question is. So, you know, on that post, I had outlined the three things that you can ask someone, you know, does the person have, you know, the capabilities of doing it? Are they being allowed to do it? Those kinds of questions to say to yourself, is this a training problem or is this something that can be fixed with a different kind of intervention? And I think if you follow that and then use a solid design structure in putting your program together, you have the opportunity for success. But I know as an HR person, in my, you know, corporate experience, I would sit there and senior executives would look at me and say, we're not going to do training because it's not effective. And what you found out is as you were sort of digging through that comment is somebody did training when training couldn't have fixed the problem in the first place. But, you know, a VP said, let's do training, and everybody just got all excited because, oh, my gosh, they're asking for training. Let's do training. And training ended up not being the right answer.
Yeah, totally. And it's actually expensive as well. And if you spend a lot of time for the training perspective, it's going to affect the productivity as well. So from your perspective, what should be the managers, you know, look for when they coach their team members to identify what are the factors that I need to look for if the employee or if the team member require training or not?
You know, you're bringing up a great question because I was just reading this morning Gallup's State of the American Workplace report. If you haven't seen it, it's a fascinating report talking about what's currently going on in U.S. workplaces. There's a mind-boggling statistic in there that 70% of today's workforce is disengaged. And, you know, we talk about employee engagement all the time, and we have this that, you know, some people are calling it a buzzword, if you will, but the idea that employees are disengaged, and Gallup suggests, at least this was my takeaway, that Gallup suggests that one of the things that companies need to do to fix that is to conduct proper management and leadership training and hold managers accountable for working with employees and soliciting that kind of feedback on a regular basis. So business, if they are concerned about engagement-related issues, maybe they're seeing a little bit more turnover. Maybe, you know, Nisha, you had mentioned the productivity issue. If they're seeing, you know, less productivity than they've seen in the past, you know, they're tracking those kinds of numbers, then they can look back and say, you know, why is this happening, and, you know, what do we need to do to fix it?
So where do you think, or where do you feel that the training should actually start with an employee? So day one, you got, let's say a new employee. So where does the training start?
Well, I think the first thing you want to do is the onboarding process. And there's a distinction there between onboarding and orientation to me, because onboarding is that whole process that happens to make you a productive employee, which is well beyond the however many hours you spend in company orientation. In the onboarding case, onboarding in some situations happens before an employee actually even starts. There are things in place that employees might need to know about the company prior to their first start date, depending upon their position within the organization. And when an employee comes, then they go through the orientation process. The key there from an onboarding standpoint is to sit down with your managers and get some sense of how long it takes to become a fully productive employee within the organization. You know, some positions they'll say, oh, you know, 2 weeks. Some they'll say a year. And, you know, what kind of support is the organization providing? If it takes a year to bring an employee up fully up to speed, then shouldn't there be some sort of long-term process and touch points beyond the first 90 days that helps an employee be successful and know the things that they need to do? There's an interesting book out there but I think he's with the Harvard School of Business, talking about the first 90 days specifically for leaders that are moving into positions, management leadership positions within an organization, and how they can approach their first 90 days of employment in order to be successful. So a great read if you're thinking about moving into a new team or a new position within the organization. You can look at the status of the company and then make some decisions about how you want to approach being a new team member moving into that company.
Cool, that's great. And we have a question that came up on Twitter based on onboarding. They're asking, how should the onboarding focus differ for millennials, Gen X, and baby boomers in the workforce?
I would go out and tap into existing employees. I've worked for companies where after an employee came into the organization, maybe at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, I've even done it like at 6 months and a year, gone back and taken a pulse point and said, tell me what you wish we would have told you before. You know, where did we drop the ball? You know, what, and start to collect some data. That's going to change depending upon the organization. That's going to change possibly depending upon the position within the organization. And you should be tracking that. You know, HR professionals should be tracking where, you know, what do people think of the recruitment process, of their onboarding process, of their orientation process. And sometimes sitting in the room at the moment that it's happening might not be a good judge of how effective the process was, because once people get out in the workplace, how much they know or didn't know is what you really want to find out.
That's a great insight, Shirley. So I have this question in my mind, and I'm going to ask to both of you guys. So when we talk about onboarding, that is a structured program. It's not a one-on-one or a one-time program. So it's actually a way, if you do effectively, that's going to directly influence the productivity and make the employee more productive and within short span of time. So, but who is actually owning the onboarding process? So who is onboarding who should be onboarding your new employees? Is it HR or is it involved with HR and managers? So how about you, Brian? First of all, I want to get your take on who is onboarding your new employees.
We actually had a blog post go out on our CVOC.com website today. One of our speakers who specializes in engagement, Don McPherson, put it out, and it was on onboarding, and I loved his take. He basically says, and I agree with this, you should have your top performers in the company, I mean the leaders that really, you know the history and, you know, just really dive in and get things done, the activators, those are the people that should onboard. Because most people come in, and when you're doing the company, you're looking around, and you're trying to figure out culturally who goes where, what do you do, you know, and if you've got somebody that you can look to that's like, oh, yeah, I've been here for X amount of time, here's kind of the, you know, here's the way we, you know, here's the way that I've done it in the past, and they're, you know, just good conversationalists, I think that's a great idea. I mean, I truly think that's how you immediately get people jumping in, because they're seeing, you know, somebody that is, you know, performing in the company actually in the onboarding process versus, you know, just operationally. So
I agree with that. I think you need to have onboarding people in touch with the onboarding process at every different level within the organization. You know, I think about the times that I've moved into a new position and I've, you know, gone through the onboarding process, you know, from an HR perspective, you know, I met with the controller to learn about the company financials and how to read them so that I could be a productive member of the executive team. But then I also met with the purchasing clerk who could explain to me the purchasing process and how I would go about, you know, requisitioning things and budgeting for things and stuff like that. So I think you need to look at the scope of that person's responsibilities and then say, okay, these are the individuals that and the person needs to meet with, a new hire needs to meet with in order to be successful. And those are the people you build into the onboarding process. And it'll be different by the person.
Well, and that's, you know, and it's probably a little bit different by position. I mean, there's just some different things that, and I don't know, that's the onboarding thing. I've never been in a company that ever did onboarding well. I've been in companies where they didn't do onboarding at all. So, I think that's topic for another day, that we would love to have you back. We are actually out of time. Time goes fast when we're having great conversations. So,
you were kidding when you said that the time would go quickly.
I know. It's like I said, we'll get you back on because we got lots more to talk about when your schedule will allow. So, Charlene, it is an absolute pleasure having you on the show again. We appreciate your time and just keep continuing to put out the things you do, because a lot of people spend a lot of time looking at it, and I know that it has lots of positive effects. So please, please continue. Requests from from the audience here, me being one of them. So, but okay, folks, it has been a great day so far. We are going to roll on out, and I hope everybody has a fantastic rest of the day. I think we're going to roll with a little cheer.